Hello, my name is Andy Bombeck, and welcome to another Mojo Music, where I'll be reading articles from Mojo Magazine, along with playing snippets of music. Please let Sun Sounds Radio know if you enjoyed today's program, or how it could be improved. Okay, as I mentioned last week, I'm going to read articles from the most current August 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. And it seems appropriate, with the recent passing of Ozzy Osbourne of Black Sabbath, that I'm going to read an article titled Into the Void. And I'm going to read another article titled Be My B-A-B-Y about Carla Thomas. And then a classic album review of Sweethearts of the Rodeo by the Byrds. And here's the article, Into the Void. The Black Sabbath story will end definitively on July 5th, when the band concludes 57 years of Sieg, Queenness, Heaviosity, and Tranky Comic Conflict at an epical mega gig at Villa Park. Or will it? With less than a month to go, it's still unclear quite how these gallant let frail septuagenarians make it to the stage or off it. We'll probably keel over after two songs, they tell Keith Cameron. The last time Bill Ward went through the gates at Villa Park, he was 15, and the Beatles were at number one. He doesn't recall much about the football match, apart from local hero Mike Tindall, playing at wing half for Aston Villa. But Ward does remember the halftime entertainment. I was at the Witten End, and it was so fucking cold that night, we got some OXO to stay warm, he says. Then they played She Loves You, and I thought, man, the Beatles sound so good through those loudspeakers. Hearing the Beatles, a landmark hit record, crackle through the wintry chill of an old football stadium in Birmingham changed Bill Ward's life. That same year, 1963, he began playing drums in rock and roll bands with his guitarist friend Tony Iommi. In 1968, the pair hooked up with fellow Estonians Terence Geezer Butler and John Ozzy Osbourne to form Earth. Soon renamed Black Sabbath, within 10 years, Butler, Iommi, Osbourne, and Ward reconfigured rock's DNA, turning the raw heavy metal ambience of industrial Birmingham into a new music, and tearing themselves apart in the process. This summer, after 20 years, Sondered, those same four sons of Ashton will play together on stage once again. This time, and all agree, for the final time. It will be the sounds of Black Sabbath blasting out of loudspeakers at Villa Park. We all lived around that villa ground, says Ward. On match days, I used to mind cars on Gossinger Road where I was born. Mind your car, mister? What we were really saying was, I'll scratch your fucking car if you don't give us sixpence. You had to learn blackmail at 6 years old. But I feel blessed to have that place in my life. Even though I live in California now, I'm still an Estonian. We all are. So it's just time to be going back home. Back where we were born. Dubbed Back to the Beginning, this final Black Sabbath show is remarkable for a number of reasons, most obvious that Ozzy Osbourne is able to take part. Now 76, the singer's last full concert performance was the December 31st, 2018 Ozfest in Los Angeles. The following February, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease after a fall at his home, which exacerbated neck vertebrae injuries sustained in a 2003 quad bike accident and led to a succession of surgical procedures. In February 2023, after several cancellations of the European leg of his farewell No More Tours to go round, he announced his retirement from touring and subsequently withdrew from the Power Trip Festival in California, suggesting that even one-off shows were beyond him. Yet, on July 5th, not only will Osborne perform with Black Sabbath at Villa Park, he's also billed as the main support act. Magic, smiles Sharon Osborne, Ozzy's wife and manager, when Mojo inquires how this can be possible. No, he's working. He's working with his team of people that are getting him up and moving around, working on his breathing. Doing weights to build muscles. Ozzy had 5 back surgeries in 6 years. It's hugely debilitating. So this is not something he undertook lightly. But he kept saying, "My one regret is I can't say goodbye and thank you for the life I've been given." And I thought, well, why don't we just do one big show and you can thank everybody? So we've been working on it for nearly 2 years. You know, Birmingham has given Ozzy so much. He's so proud of where he was born. He's working his little old ass off to get there. Beyond Ozzy's latest and probable return, there is the matter of the other support acts. Thanks to the bludgeoning contract book of the show's musical director, Tom Morello, back to the beginning's undercard boasts a smorgasbord of heaviosity so vast it would make Thor weep. There's Metallica and Guns N' Roses, then also Slayer, Pantera, Tool, Alice in Chains, Anthrax, and more, with sundry significant others including Sammy Hagar, Billy Corgan, Vernon Reed, and Morello himself, providing supergroup garnish throughout what promises to be and loud affair, with all profits going to Parkinson's and Birmingham Children's Charities. Big names are still being added. Sharon Osborne mentions Soundgarden, and Morello promises surprises on the day. To have so many premium acts in a limited period of time will require strictly rationed set times, with egos checked accordingly. "I certainly hope so," laughs Andy Copping, the Live Nation promoter tasked by the Osbournes with organizing it all. Having promoted the Download Festival since its inception, Copping is expert in the mechanics of big rock events. Back to the Beginning, however, has presented some very specific challenges. "Imagine putting a 3-day festival bill into one," he says, "so it's pretty intense trying to fit all those bands in. But every artist we talk to is just overjoyed to be involved. This is like Live Aid and the Freddie Mercury tribute concert rolled into one. I don't think fans of rock and metal are going to ever see anything like this again." Rock and metal stars seem to agree. Following the event's announcement in February, Copping started getting calls from artists saying they wanted in, and he had to explain there wasn't any room. Until, that is, one of these callers was Axl Rose, having noted Slash and Duff McGann in the additional performance subsection. Hence the upgrade to the full Guns N' Roses experience. It is, Andy Copping concedes, the sort of headache you want when you can turn something that was already great into something amazing. almost as extraordinary as the supporting cast depth and caliber is the willingness of all concerns to suspend their normally well-tuned hierarchical sensitivities. It's 20 years since Metallica conceded top billing to anyone and opened for the Rolling Stones in San Francisco, a reportedly chastening experience where they were asked to avoid looking directly at Mick Jagger as he emerged for a pre-show warm-up. Even Ozzy Osbourne himself, at his own Ozfest in 2008, played before Metallica. No such equivocation now when it comes to the original Black Sabbath playing together for one last time. Metallica knows their place. "We're going there to show our respect and our love," says bassist Robert Trujillo. "They've earned it. These guys are humble. They didn't grow up privileged. They really did earn every bit of their success. They've had the rough road and all the challenges that go with the business. There was no shortcut for them, and just to see how they're being celebrated, it's beautiful. I'm sure it'll be overwhelming in a good way." Trujillo is well qualified to judge the emotional significance of the event, having played in the Ozzy Osbourne band for 5 years prior joining Metallica in 2003. As he notes, Black Sabbath may have invented heavy metal. "Don't think most of the bands played this show would exist without them, but they also transcend it. No Black Sabbath means no goth, no grunge. Even hip-hop greats from Beastie Boys and Ice-T to Kanye West have sampled Sabbath." Speaking to Mojo from the Rogers Center Stadium in Toronto, where Metallica have just begun the latest leg of a 2-year world tour, Trujillo mentioned an encounter earlier in the day at his hotel gym. "I was working out, and there was a gentleman on the treadmill who was blasting Black Sabbath Volume 4. I don't know if the other people in the gym appreciated it much, but I thought it was pretty cool. He kind of looked like Rick Rubin. It turns out he plays in Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and he loves Black Sabbath. It just goes to show you the power of that band." Robert Trujillo may not have recognized him, but Warren Ellis is a famous staunch rock Epicurean. Still, would Ellis have condensed publicity soundtracking his treadmill routine with, say, Blizzard of Oz? Equally, would Axl Rose have demanded to be added to a mere farewell Ozfest? Which states Sharon Osbourne was how the Villa Park bash was originally conceived. "We'd already started putting the show together," she says. "It was already done for Ozzy. And then he said, well, I'll call the guys and see if they want to come up and do a few songs." The Sabbath factor has made Back to the Beginning an epical event, thanks to the personnel specifics. Yet, the participation of all four original members was far from guaranteed. Bill Ward, for instance, has been a conspicuous and contentious absentee from Sabbath activity ever since he last played with the band on October 18, 2005, at a UK Music Hall of Fame ceremony, and a subsequent 2006 appearance at the band's induction to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ward opted out of 2012's reunion gigs and comeback album 13, and also 2016-17 farewell tour The End. In both instances, citing an unsignable contract, to which Ozzy Osbourne responded by querying Ward's capability to perform for 2 hours each night. "Physically, we knew you were fucked," he said on Facebook. Towards the end of The End, however, Osbourne struck a more emollient note, telling Mojo he was sorry Ward wouldn't be present for the tour's final date at Birmingham's NEC Arena in February 2017. Either way, for Black Sabbath purist, it's Bill Ward's name alongside his bandmates that makes this a meaningful event. Those Black Sabbath purists include the bass player in Black Sabbath. It could only happen if the original four of us were involved, otherwise it would be pointless, says Geezer Butler. The whole concept was to finish back where we all started, in Ashton, and it would seem false having someone who wasn't there from the beginning. Ozzy texted me and asked if I'd be interested in ending the whole Sabbath story with the original four members back in Ashton. I said I'll do it if Tony and Bill were up for it, which they were. Ward concurs this was basically something that came from Oz. He called me and asked, I'm going to do one last time. Do you want to come and play? There's no finances involved in this. Those affairs during that period from 2012 onward, it wasn't particularly nice. I missed the band terribly. I missed everything about it. That was a really difficult and very painful part of my career. But regardless of everything, they're still my brothers. They always have been. And it's my understanding that there's some finality here. So, what the hell? It's a one-off gig at Villa Park, a very special place for me and the rest of the guys as well. Ironically, the only member of Black Sabbath who rejected Ozzy's request was the only member of Black Sabbath never to have left the band. To be honest, when it was first mentioned to me, I said no, I wouldn't do it, says Tony Iommi. And it went on and on. I met with Sharon and we talked about it. I was just concerned about how it's going to be health-wise for everybody, including myself. We need to be good. We've got a good legacy, and I didn't want to destroy it by everything not being right. The main thing for me is it's for charity, and we're getting back out with the original lineup to finish it off properly. But yeah, I had to be convinced, because the end of the end was the end for me. I thought that was it. But now this is the end of the end of the end, he laughs. Confusing, isn't it? Weirdly, Back to the Beginning coincides with another Brummy musical legend taking a final bow at another football stadium 3 miles away, when Jeff Lynne's ELO plays a Birmingham City FC's St. Andrews. It's Villains versus Blues in a rock and roll retirement match of the day, with extra niggle from estranged ELO drummer Bev Bevan. Having had two spells with Sabbath in the 80s, plus Sharon Osbourne's father, Don Arden, managing both bands in the 70s. Well, we know who's already won, says Sharon. Come on! The first hint of a monumental happening at Villa Park came last summer with the launch of Aston Villa's 2024-25 home kit. The promo video opened with Osborne and Butler on the phone. Hey, Geezer. All right, Oz. Let's play Villa Park. As long as I'm left wing, then rifled through a quick succession of cameos from Villa stars, past and present, pledging loyalty to manager Unai Emery over a soundtrack of Paranoid, concluding with Geezer and Ozzy yelling, Up the Villa! And here's a little bit of that famous song, Paranoid, by Black Sabbath.
Sitting with my woman, 'cause she couldn't help me with my mind.
Butler is the band's only true football fanatic. Amani appeared alongside Sharon at the Villa Park press launch for Back to the Beginning, holding personalized Sabbath claret shirts, but professes an ecumenical stance with regard to the city's football divide. "I've never been really a football fan," he admits, which is peculiar because a lot of my friends were ex-football players and managers. Trevor Francis, Andy Townsend, Andy Gray. "I did go to the Villa once with Andy Gray, but no, that's Geezer's department. Ozzy might be the self-styled prince of darkness, but it's Butler, Sabbath's principal lyricist, who is the band's philosopher king. Geezer speaks eloquently of growing up, the youngest of seven in a large Irish Catholic family on Victoria Road, a 10-minute walk from Villa Park, as well as the band's relationship with the neighborhood where all four members grew up. There was a great community spirit," he says. "Everyone was relatively poor, working class, and from diverse backgrounds. But we all helped each other out when we needed. I had an extremely happy childhood, despite having no hot water, heating, bathroom, or indoor toilet in the house. And a few bombed-out buildings during the 1950s became my playground. But those things probably made me more determined to succeed at what I am, at what I put my mind to. Ozzy, Tony, and Bill were all just streets away from me, within walking distance, which was great since none of us had cars or bikes or money. And we all shared the same sort of upbringing and were all determined to succeed, in spite of everyone telling us we'd never get anywhere with our band. We all had a fighting spirit, which you had to have growing up in Ashton. Every ounce of that fighting spirit will be required to see Black Sabbath through this final challenge. Osborne has employed a vocal coach and a live-in trainer to get him match fit for Villa Park. But it's no trivial undertaking for his bandmates either. In 2016, Amoni, now 77, was given the all-clear following treatments for lymphoma, but subsequently had a growth removed from his throat and still has regular checkups with his oncologist. "I had an appointment in the hospital yesterday," he says breezily. "I've also got a problem with a trapped nerve in my neck. 9 months and it won't shift. When you get to our age, things just go wrong. We'll probably keel over after two songs." Illness prevented Butler from joining Imani in Osborne's Birmingham Commonwealth Games finale in 2022, and the bassist is currently working hard on his flexibility. It's surprising how easily finger and hand cramps can set in after not playing for a while, he says. "Out there in front of thousands of fans, I'm aware that if I mess up, the whole band will look bad." Ward, meanwhile, is doubling down on rehearsal and fitness programs with his drum crew, building the core strength and leg power required to drive Sabbath's massive double bass drum attack, and getting his weight down. He sounds like a man with a point to prove. "I'll be 77 when we play that gig. That's a whole other world. 77 and playing 26-inch bass drums? One could call it lunacy, but I never stopped working, especially in the past 4 years. I've been making my own albums, playing the entire time. I've got to be down in weight to be able to swerve and move and crash and thrash. I got to be able to punch those bass drums. That's what's going to be expected of me, and I expect that of me also." A lugubrious chuckle. "I'm expecting the soundscape to be very loud." In truth, with a couple of months to go, no one can say with certainty how Back to the Beginning will play out. There is circumspection around the issue of Ozzy on stage. Amoni suggests he'll sit in a throne, while Sharon points to the Commonwealth Games setup when Ozzy had a metal harness that he could lean against. Then there's the set's duration. Ward says he was told to prepare for 4 or 5 songs, but is training for the possibility of 6 or more. The picture will become clearer once the 4 members, plus their support teams, convene in the UK for a week's studio rehearsal in June, followed by a couple of days' stage rehearsal at Birmingham Arena, followed by a stage rehearsal at Villa Park on the day before the gig, which happens to be Ozzy and Sharon's 43rd wedding anniversary. "A joyous time for everyone," laughs Mrs. Osborne. As for what song Sabbath will play, that seems more straightforward, given a core of material they're practically obliged to perform. Part of Tom Morello's job has been to coordinate the support acts' Sabbath tributes, ensuring that when the stars of the show inevitably play Paranoid, it hasn't already been rendered a dozen times throughout the day. The one thing for sure is that, unlike The End, this really is the end. Ozzy said as much. "He says a lot of stuff," laughs Bill Ward, "but the gist of it was, I'm going to do one last time." Tony Amani is firm. "I won't be doing it again. This will be the final show. I mean, can you imagine us trying to tour? No, this will be it." Geezer Butler, however, knows that where his band is concerned, it's safer to expect the unexpected. "I've given up thinking about the end of Sabbath," he says. "Every time I think or say it's over, things like this show come along. Someone will probably have our DNA and resurrect us in the distant future. Who knows?" And here's a little side article titled, "I'm Done, I'm Done. Stop Press. Ozzy takes time off physical rehab to answer Mojo's questions." When Mojo met you in November 2016, you just played your last American show with Black Sabbath and were looking forward to the end of the end in Birmingham early in 2017. But it turns out that the end wasn't the end, after all. From your perspective, how and why has Back to the Beginning come about? "I never got the chance to say a proper thank you to my fans for the life they have given me and the dedication they have shown me throughout my career. As you know, my solo farewell tour was cut short by a year because of my fall. Sharon came up with the idea of playing the Villa to say goodbye and be joined by many of my friends that I've worked with over the years. So I called Geezer, Tony, and Bill to see if they wanted to come up to do some songs, and thankfully they did. In 2016, you said to Mojo that you were sorry Bill wasn't involved in the end. How important to you is it that Bill is involved this time around?" "It's very important that Bill is part of this show. My career started with Bill, and I'd really like to finish with Bill by my side." "Can you describe the physical challenges facing you in order to do a show like this?" "Well, I'm not going to bore you with my physical challenges these days. Let's just say it's a fucking lot." "Obviously, Aston is where you grew up and where the band was born. Can you tell us a story that will explain your connection to this area and what it means to you?" "Aston made me who I am. Being born there taught me so many things about life. It gave me ambition. I grew up close to Villa Park, and when the Villa were playing home matches, me and my mates would go down to the ground and offer to mind people's cars while the match was on for a shilling. Eventually, we thought to offer to wash the cars for more money. The first car I washed was a Brillo pad, was with a Brillo pad, so you can imagine the outcome. That was a clue that it was my time to move on to other things. Are you feeling nervous yet? Well, even if it was a regular gig, I would be a nervous wreck. I was born nervous. Right now, I'm feeling grateful and proud, and I'm sure I'll be feeling dozens more emotions on the day of the show. And will this really be the end for Black Sabbath? After this show, I'm going home, closing the door, and will look back upon a great career I've had. But I'm done. Done, done. You gotta know when to call it quits. And I can't read an article about Black Sabbath without playing a little bit of their song, Iron Man. Okay, rest in peace, Ozzy Osbourne. Okay, now I move on to the article, Be My B-A-B-Y. Among the starlets of 60s soul, Stax original Carla Thomas was dubbed the Queen. Adorned by the Beatles and Otis, a star turned at Watts Stack at 82, her flame burns bright. Her career, a storied object lesson. I have tried to make it a joyful experience, she tells Andrew Perry. And here's a little bit of that song, B-A-B-Y, by Carla Thomas.
Baby, oh baby, I love to call you baby.
Carla Thomas was 24 years old when she flew transatlantic for the first time with a Stax Volt Review to tour Europe in spring 1967. Touching down at Heathrow, the craziness commenced. The Beatles had sent limousines to collect the entire entourage, which also included Sam and Dave, Eddie Floyd, Otis Redding, with whom Thomas had recorded the duet album King and Queen, released the previous month, plus Booker T and the MGs, house band for all the acts, along with the three-man Memphis Horns. Despite her tender age, Thomas was often billed as the Queen of Memphis Soul, having blazed a trail on Stax's satellite precursor with her self-composed 1960 single, Gee Whiz, Look at His Eyes. And earlier that year, another hit, 'Cause I Love You, alongside her father, Rufus Thomas, of Walking the Dog fame. Here's a little bit of that song, Gee Whiz, Look at His Eyes by Carla Thomas. British pop royalty adored Stax's greasily R&B flavored sound was a given. After all, the fledging Rolling Stones covered Walking the Dog, but none of the reviews acts were prepared for the attention that greeted them in Europe. At a warm-up gig by Carla Thomas and the MGs at the Bag of Nails, the hipster hangout on London's Kingsley Street, all four Beatles were in attendance. We'd been sent down to this quaint little club just to get Booker acclimatized to his rented organ. Thomas, now 82, remembers. Booker was taking a little solo at one point, and I backed up to him and said, stage whisper, maybe I'm seeing things, but isn't that Paul McCartney sitting over there at that table? I couldn't believe he would be there for our show. So afterwards, I ask him, is this your club? Like that would be why he was there, looking so comfortable. Carla Ventia Thomas was born in Memphis on December 21, 1942. Designed for show business by dint of her irrepressible father, in later life tagged the world's oldest teenager. Rufus's career began in the mid-30s, when he toured with the all-black Rabbit Foot Minstrels, and by 1951, he had become a renowned R&B DJ on Memphis's WDIA. He also recorded for Sun, pre-Elvis, and scored the label's first national hit in 1953 with Bearcat, to answer record to Big Mama Thornton's Hound Dog. My daddy was blessed, says Carla mistily. When he walked into a room, people saw a performer, a joke teller. Whatever you needed as far as entertainment, a dancer, a singer, a broadcaster, he could do it, and he loved being where the action was. To that end, they lived just 15 minutes' walk from Beale Street, Memphis's musical nerve center, where Thomas Sr. hosted amateur shows at the Palace Theater. Recalls Carla, I was maybe 7 or 8, but they'd let me and my brother Marvel sit and watch the different acts. And here would come B.B. King, Bobby Blue Bland, Elmore James, Muddy Waters, very young. I was obviously in the same way influenced by them. Yet young Carla's tastes were broad, embracing gospel and country. Where I lived was like a potpourri of all kinds of music, she says. Memphis has something very special, like a music whirlwind that goes around in people's heads. Thomas remembers gravitating toward the Satellite Record Store at 926 East McLemore Avenue in South Memphis, where the white proprietor, Elston Axton, would put a speaker up outside and play the latest pop and R&B disc. And all the kids from our African-American neighborhood would come out, dance, and hang out. Outside there, I met people like the Hodges brothers, who later formed the High Rhythm Section. Axton and her brother, Jim Stewart, bank workers by day, have been trying to break into making records themselves. Inspired by Sam Phillips' Sun Studio, they acquired the former Capitol Theater. And in summer 1960, invited Rufus Thomas over, hoping that he'd plug their project on the radio. Maybe it was prophetic, says Carla, but Daddy took me with him that day, and as we were leaving, Jim asked Dad, "Have you ever thought about recording again?" Rufus's big idea was to cut a duet with Carla. At 17, a veteran of WDIA's Teen Time Singers. The Rufus penned 'Cause I Love You, a gritty floor filler, peaked at number 9 in Billboard. It would make Carla's name and Satellites. William Bell, whose sublime You Don't Miss Your Water would also emerge on Satellite. And Charlie Hodges, the in-house organist at Memphis's High Records, but also a regular sessioneer at Satellite Stax. Both remember Carla as very much under her daddy's wing. In August 1960, Rufus fixed it for her to record her own Gee Whiz with Bell's Del Rio's singing backup. There were probably only 5 musicians playing, included the strings, Thomas laughs. That's what I love about Memphis musicians. You just sang to them what you wanted for your song, and they played it for you so beautifully. It's not about being meticulous or writing down a chart. Gee Whiz's gooey vibe of teen romance was hardly R&B, more in line with Carla's teen pop heroine, Baby Washington. And it duly scaled to number 10 on the U.S. pop chart in early 61, with the aid of Atlantic Records' distribution muscle. Carla became one of those female heroes, says Bell, like you had Mary Wells and Martha Reeves at Motown, and Barbara Mason and Maxine Brown at the other labels. And they all held court at pop radio before groups like the Supremes came along. Thomas hit the road, playing one-off shows around the Mid-South with Bell, as well as Proto Stax Review with the Marquees as backing band, and also a tour with High Records, Willie Mitchell, and the High Rhythm Section. It was a steep learning curve on stage and off, in multiracial touring parties greeted in many towns with hostility. It was wonderful the way we were all mixed up together, says Thomas, on some shows with the Marquees, who had Steve Cropper and Miss Axton's son, Packy, at that time. I was the only African-American up there, and these were often African-American venues. I've currently gone through some verbal situations and some almost physical situations in those days. Yet Thomas always had an extended family of musicians looking out for her. Everybody kept tight reins on Carla because she was like our little sister, says Bell. And of course, we didn't want to have to explain to Rufus why something happened to her. Throughout the mid-60s, as Satellite became Stax, Thomas was its leading lady, scoring another big hit with B.A.B.Y., penned for her by Isaac Hayes and David Porter. Bell says that she was loved by all and respected for her musicality. Carla played keys, so she knew the musical side, which not every singer did, says Bell. She would rehearse with the band, and she was such a pro at the singing because she came right out of church. I think the unique thing she had in her voice was an innocence. We used to tease her about that because she was of age, but guys didn't know whether to talk to her or not because we were so protective. As Macon, Georgia's Otis Redding rose to stardom at Stax, Thomas was the obvious choice to play queen to his king. It was a wonderful feeling to record with him, says Thomas. You could have sold tickets to his sessions because he was as powerful as if he was on stage. I said to him, "Otis, you country, you walk with bears in the wild down here in Macon." But when he walked in the studio, he walked in Reddy. One of Redding's ideas was to cover Tramp, a mid-60s R&B by Lowell Fulson, where Thomas Sassily remarked on Otis's down-home roots, and which went top 30 on the U.S. Hot 100. And here's a little bit of that song, Tramp, by Otis Redding and Carla Thomas.
What you call me?
Tramp.
You didn't.
You don't wear continental clothes or Stetson hats.
But I tell you one doggone thing, it makes me feel good to know one thing. I know I'm alive. Mama was.
So.
I believe. And I'm the only child living alone.
You know what, Otis?
What?
You're country.
That's all right.
You straight from the Georgia woods.
That's good.
You know what? You wear overalls.
Her 1973 single, Love Among People, would prove to be her Stax farewell. And after the label went bankrupt in January 1976, she all but quit recording, returning to the stage sporadically. "I was in acting school out in L.A., she reveals, and doing pop shows like Johnny Carson and a Henry Mancini special. I was in a different place, really enjoying it." Carla has never been up and down. Up and down, says Hodges, happy that she never suffered the indignity of career fluctuations. She always just did it when she wanted to do it. "I have tried to make it a joyful experience," explains Thomas. "I guess I could quit, but when people say, 'Would you like to go to London?' I go, 'Oh, yes, I'd like that.'" Hence, this July, Thomas plays her first shows on British soil in 20 years with Martin Shore's Grammy-winning Take Me to the River Project's Memphis Soul Review. Without going after them, Thomas has been reaching new generations, such as Memphis singer-songwriter Valerie June, who tracked her down for 2021's collaborative track, Call Me a Fool. Says Boo Mitchell, who connected them, "My guess on why Carl is still doing it is that she has a whole lot still to give on her terms." Charlie Hodges, her friend for 60-plus years, puts it more emotionally. "Carla has been like a sister forever, a beautiful spirit, and, to this day, the best singer I ever heard." And here's some of the song Love Among People by Carla Thomas.
In your neighbor, but if you think he's truly a friend, ask for a favor. And just because he smiles at you, that doesn't mean his friendship's true. So to live in harmony is what we got to do. Yeah.
And the classic album review this week is Sweethearts of the Rodeo by the Byrds, 1968. In March 1968, when the Byrds entered Columbia Records, Nashville studio, to record their sixth album, only two original members remained, Roger McGuinn and Chris Hillman. McGuinn had envisioned this project as a double LP that told the story of American popular music from traditional country through rock to futuristic Moog-powered electronic. New recruit Graham Parsons, who had played country with his International Submarine Band on Safe at Home for Lee Hazelwood's LHI Records, persuaded him to stop at country. Along with ISB's Bob Buchanan, Parsons co-wrote Sweethearts, Standout, the yearning steel guitar-laden ballad of lost innocence, Hickory Wind. And here's a little bit of that song, Hickory Wind, by the Byrds.
In South Carolina, there are many tall pines. I remember the oak tree that we used to climb. But now when I'm lonesome, I always pretend that I'm getting the feel of hickory wind.
He also sang lead on it. Authored the only other original song, 100 Years From Now, and suggested four of the nine cover versions. Parsons would have completely dominated the LP if it had not been for Hazelwood, who claimed he was still under contract to him and threatened to sue. Consequently, Parsons' vocal was wiped from versions of William Bell's You Don't Miss Your Water and the Leuven Brothers' The Christian Life. The sole nods to the Byrds' past were covers of Dylan's You Ain't Goin' Nowhere and Nothing Was Delivered, culled from basement tapes. And here's some of the song You Ain't Goin' Nowhere from the Byrds from their album Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
So swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, feelings froze. Get your mind off winter time, you ain't going nowhere. Pick up your tent, you ain't going nowhere.
The Byrds' audience was used to groundbreaking experimentation from the band, but balked at the album's adoption of a genre they associated with conservative rednecks. A relative failure on release, it has since been resurrected as a pioneering text in country rock, exerting a powerful influence on bands as diverse as the Eagles and Wilco. And here's a little bit of the song, The Christian Life, from the Byrds, from Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
My buddies tell me that I should have waited. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. But I still love them and I sing with pride. I like the Christian life. I won't lose a friend by heeding God's call. For what is a friend who'd want you to fall?
And unfortunately, once again, that's all the time that we have for today. Please join me next week when I continue reading articles from the August 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. I'm going to read the cover story about the Beatles 60 years ago opened up the door to a brave new world with weed and acid. And if we have time, I'm going to read Mojo Collections, Rarities, Record Shops, Crate Diggers Assemble, and a classic album review of Hounds of Love by Kate Bush. Until then, this is Andy Bobick for Mojo Music saying so long and keep rockin'.